Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you please read the changes to the agenda?
Yes, you have several changes to today's agendas. Item C4, which was a hearing to consider two ordinances amending Title 19, the Building and Construction Ordinance, and C5, the hearing to consider two ordinances amending Title 8 of the County Code regarding the Health and Sanitation Ordinance. These items have both been withdrawn as your board took action on these two items last week and continued them to other dates. Under added items for closed session, under pending litigation, you have the addition of number 19, Hartzell versus County of San Luis Obispo, and number 3, conference with real property negotiator. It is the intention of the board to have a closed session to have a conference with its real property negotiator concerning the following. Number 20, property description is Tef Street, Napomo, APN 09014100006, approximately 1 acre. Parties with whom negotiating, Napomo Community Services District. Instructions to negotiator, prices, terms, and conditions. Number 21, property description is 800 West Branch Street in Arroyo Grande. Parties with whom negotiating is the City of Arroyo Grande. Instructions to negotiators, price, terms, and conditions. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Amended items to consent, item A6, submittal of a resolution establishing the 2008-2009 special tax rate and confirming the per parcel special tax amount for County Service Area 21, Bradford Circle, improvements on in Cambria 2nd District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending the cover sheet be amended to change Bradford Circle to read Bradford Road. And that's your changes for today.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. With that, we'll move on to the consent calendar, and I'll open it to public comment on items on consent. I have one request to speak, and that is Mr. Eric Greening on item A9.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening on item A9. This is the memorandum of agreement for the Nacimiento Water Project in compliance with Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. And if you turn to the actual text of the agreement, page 7, A-9-7, starting at line 54, it basically asserts that everything up to the boundary of Camp Roberts is traditional tribal land of the Santa Ynez Band of Chumash. I find that questionable information. The Ineseño Chumash are in Santa Barbara County, and a project that extends from almost the Monterey County line into San Luis Obispo, I would assume that the territory would be Obispeño Chumash at the southern end of the project and the Migueleño Salinan for the northern part of it and the bulk of it. That's what I would assume. I would assume that the native groups with whom they should be dealing in this memorandum would be the Northern Chumash and the Salinan tribe of Monterey and San Luis Obispo counties. And so I'm wondering, were those tribes consulted? Because it just doesn't make sense that this is part of Ineseño territory. I'm wondering what the authority for that particular assertion would be. I would certainly defer to the Ineseños when we were in their territory, but I'm just wondering why they're the group that's being dealt with here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I have no other request to speak on consent items, so with that, I'll bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues if there are any items they would like to speak to. Supervisor Ovett, none. Supervisor Sajian?
Wondering if anybody's here to respond to Mr. Greening's question.
I see Mr. Hollenbeck here. Perhaps we have. Okay, and I actually have a little input on that myself. But would you address? Well, hold on one moment. Let me go down the gamut here, and then Supervisor Lenthal has no items, and I would just like a response to Mr. Greening's inquiry.
Thank you. Good morning, Supervisors. Eric Weir, Public Works Department. The reason that the Santa Ynez Band of the Chumash is on the memorandum of agreement is that they are the federally recognized tribe for our area. So that's very important in that this document, the lead agency for this document is a federal agency, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's important also to recognize that the district has been consulting with the other Native American tribes, including the Northern Chumash and the Salinan tribes.
Okay, good. So you do have, I know when we had the groundbreaking up at the lake that the representatives of the Salinans were there and participating, and so you are in conversation or in contact with them regarding this project?
Yes, we are.
Okay, and I did talk with Fred Collins just last week, representative of the Northern Chumash, and he said that he was engaged in the project as well. So hopefully that'll satisfy those questions. Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a motion then.
Move to approve the consent calendar.
A second.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's unanimous, Madam Clerk, but we do need a roll call.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Unlike last week when we had an hour and a half of hearings on consent, we're moving right through it this morning, as it should be. We'll move on then to our presentation calendar. Angie King? She's not here yet. Okay. I know she's planning on coming, so we'll skip over that presentation, and I'll ask Supervisor Linthal if he would please proceed with the resolution for the American
Red Cross.
I'll make
a motion to approve the
presentation
calendar.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Ovid. Moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Thank you. Okay, Supervisor Linthal, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Grace McIntosh, would you step forward, please, to one of the podiums? I don't see Brian Duvall, but if he comes in, we'll tease him for being 5 minutes late. How's that?
That's all right. I saw him Saturday night. He's alive.
Okay. One of the best parts of this job is doing these proclamations. I can think of nothing better, at least in my adult lifetime here in San Luis Obispo County, than the Red Cross. They do wonderful things on a daily basis, whether it's here locally, in other areas. And so, Grace, I want to read this resolution and congratulate you for obviously being at the helm of the Red Cross. Whereas celebrating its 91st year in San Luis Obispo County, the American Red Cross has led the effort to prevent, prepare, and respond to disasters, making our community a stronger, safer, and healthier place. Whereas the national disasters dominate most of the headlines, San Luis Obispo County quietly responds to local emergencies such as a house fire, which we had just the other night here with four Poly students, as well as floods, and assists military families and trains residents in life-saving skills such as family disaster preparedness, CPR, and first aid. Whereas as we celebrate the contributions of the Red Cross in San Luis Obispo County and across our nation, we must also look forward and do our part to ensure that the Red Cross remains vital and ready to help prevent and prepare for and respond to any unknown challenges that lie ahead. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim March 2008 as American Red Cross Month and urges all county residents to continue to give their time and money to make a difference in the humanitarian fabric of this community. The San Luis Obispo County Chapter receives no financial support from the National Red Cross or federal government and relies upon local contributions to support local activities. When we help the American Red Cross, we truly help each other. Grace, congratulations. If you come forward and get this resolution, we sure appreciate you.
I got a minute?
Grace, your turn to say, and you don't have to go by the 3-minute rule. If you want to talk about the Red Cross for 4 minutes, you can.
Okay. Well, I will be brief because I know you all have much to do. So you're absolutely right, Supervisor Linthal. We've been quietly responding to things throughout the county, starting on our fiscal year July 1, started July 4th with the fire in California Valley. Our volunteers were there. Our volunteers also assisted those young people yesterday. So we're doing stuff every day. So far since July, we've had about 36 incidents that we have responded to where we've provided individuals and families with clothing, food, shelter, all kinds of case management assistance.
In addition, we've worked with over 100 members of the military and their loved ones in getting that emergency communication back and forth, which a lot of folks don't know that we do. That's just since July 1. We've also gone real strong with our high school clubs and our new Cal Poly Young Adult Club, helping to teach our young people the importance of giving back to the community. And it's really been, you know, quite an amazing thing to see these young people. We're really quite proud of them. We've also helped about 10,000 people with first aid, CPR, babysitting, and our newest pet first aid, which we had our first pet first aid class up in the Atascadero a month or so ago, and it is just booming with folks that are really interested in making sure that their animals are safe in the event of a disaster. Probably the thing that I'm most impressed upon in terms of the work of our volunteers, but not only within the Red Cross, but the organizations in our county, is our VOAD, our Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. We've completed 1 year. We have about 40 member organizations of the nonprofit and faith-based communities that are working very closely with our government first responders. This is really, I would have to say, one of the best models of collaboration that I have seen in my 28 or so years of working with nonprofits and government. These are truly organizations that really are coming together for a common purpose, which is helping the residents of our local county in the event of a disaster, but not only in the event of the disaster in the immediate aftermath, but the more important relief and long-term recovery that is so essential in our county, really working together as groups. I'm very proud of the work they've done, and I want to take just a special moment to recognize the Office of Emergency Services and Tracy Vardis, who has worked very hard to ensure that this collaboration continues to be a success. I'd love to spend an hour or two talking with you about this great project, but I will not, and tickle you for some other time. Thank you very much.
If I may, before you step down, I know there probably are some other comments, Grace, but it's no secret that I watched firsthand for 30-something years the great work that the Red Cross has done, and the bar was very high when you took over, but I want to congratulate you for raising the bar and doing an outstanding job of providing leadership for us, not only introducing the VOAD, but other things, and I don't know how you do it, but your passion and tenacity comes through every day, and I know the Red Cross in this county, at least, is better because of your being here. Thank you.
Supervisor Ovid.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to do, and I didn't have an opportunity to stay late, but at the economic forum the other day, congratulate you both, you and Tracy, on an excellent program, because the subject is one that somebody keeps putting off behind them all the time, and I think you did, and Tracy both did very well at bringing out the importance of emergency preparedness for businesses. And I think it was an excellent program. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And, Grace, I don't think people realize how involved the Red Cross is in so many community activities besides just responding to national disasters and emergencies and local disasters and emergencies. I want to commend you especially for engaging young people and encouraging them to get involved in community. That's extremely important in my mind, and thank you for doing that as well.
Thank you. We'll see you at Colony Days again.
Yes, you will. Okay, with that, we'll move on to the next resolution, and it gives me great pleasure to read this resolution proclaiming March 2008 is National Women's History Month in San Luis Obispo County. And Ms. Angie King, if you would come forward, I'll read this proclamation. Whereas in 1987, Congress declared by resolution the month of March as National Women's History Month. And whereas that resolution acknowledged that the role of American women has been consistently overlooked and undervalued in the literature, teaching, and the study of American history. And whereas the San Luis Obispo chapter of the National Organization for Women is part of an international membership organization whose mission is to take action to bring women into the mainstream of American society with full and equal partnership with men. And there's another part here I want to include. And whereas the Women's Community Center of San Luis Obispo County is a not-for-profit agency whose mission is to educate, enlighten, and empower women and their families in San Luis Obispo County by providing information, referrals, and resources needed to live more productive lives. And whereas On Saturday, March 15th, this past Saturday, the San Luis Obispo City County Library celebrated Women's History Month with a Share Her Story event that encouraged the public to share, reflect, and discuss inspiring and influential women in their lives and educate all people about the contributions of women to government, business, industry, science, health, education, social work, and the cultural arts. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby proclaim March 2008 as National Women's History Month. Thank you. Would you like to say a few words?
Thank you very much for the resolution. On behalf of the National Organization for Women and the Women's Community Center and all the other organizations in San Luis Obispo County which seek to educate the community about women's rights and achievements, we thank you for recognizing the contributions made by women and for acknowledging Women's History Month. Gloria Steinem has said, the personal is political and the political is personal, and nowhere is this more true than in discovering women's histories. Last Saturday, as you referenced, while some of us were demonstrating against the war, many others, including some in the audience, were gathered at the Slo County Library to share stories about the women they admire. And almost without exception, these women were family members. Women's arena had been for so long the province of our personal private lives that these women made a lasting impression on their families for their courage and activism in the events of their times. Now, women are far more public and political, but the politics is still personal, how it affects us, our families, and our community. In the spirit of Women's History Month, let me ask, rhetorically, of course, how many of us know the names of these women who were the first to achieve the following? The first woman to fly a plane, which broke the sound barrier, was Jacqueline Cochran in 1960. The first woman to become a major general in the U.S. Army, General Mary Clark in 1978. The first woman to co-anchor a TV news show, Barbara Walters, in 1976, and so forth, and many more. Anonymous may have been a woman at one time, but only because a woman could not get her work published under her own name. But thanks to continuing educational efforts and a less discriminatory culture that has resulted, women's voices are now being heard all over the world. So thank you again for your support of our efforts. And I'd like to recognize Sonia Paz Baron-Vine, who is a member of the board of the Women's Community Center, who participated in the Women's History last Saturday at the library.
Thank you. I'll put my colleagues on the spot and ask them to name one important woman in their lives. Mr. Linthal?
I'm starting with my mother because my mother's watching and I know I'd be in trouble if I didn't.
Supervisor Sajjan?
Obviously, my mother, my sisters, my wife, my daughter. Which one do you want?
I'll take them all. I'll ditto that. Supervisor Ovett, you probably missed that. An important woman in your life.
Well, you know, it isn't where anyone...
Or women.
Either no, one. No, I'm just trying to how to say that because she passed away a number of years ago, and that was my mother.
Last thing, I'm sorry, I forgot. I know you have copies of the Women's Press because I was here last week, but I'd like to leave them out in the back for any member of the audience to pick up.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. With that, we'll move on to public comment on items that are not on the agenda. And I do have some requests to speak during public comment, so I'll call those folks forward, beginning with Helen Sampson, followed by Joyce Ellen Lippman, and concluding with Carol Smith. So, ladies.
Good morning. My name is Helen Sampson, and I'm the program director of the Linkages program at Life Steps Foundation. Linkages provides case management and respite services to functionally impaired adults and frail seniors with the ultimate goal of avoiding unnecessary long-term care out-of-home placement. LifeSteps is one of many nonprofit entities which provide services that address the physical, functional, social, and emotional well-being of our county's elderly residents. and we've all been reading the headlines. February 21st, LA Times. California's budget shortfall has swollen to $16 billion from $14.5 billion. February 25th, Santa Maria Times. It's no secret that when the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors holds the 2008-2009 fiscal year budget hearings in June, the board will have to make cuts in department budgets. Under the umbrella of the Senior Services Coalition, the nonprofit agencies serving seniors have come together during these difficult times, not to throw our hands up in despair, but to lend our voices to this critical conversation. How do we continue to meet the needs of our most vulnerable residents in today's fiscal environment? Monthly, one of our members will share with the board and the community what resources are in place, what needs remain unmet, and what possible strategies can be considered to meet them. And while we may not always know the perfect answer, we can certainly agree on at least one of the central questions. As a community, how can we do better to serve the individuals that have built our community? We should, of course, confront our current challenges armed with a positive can-do attitude. However, realism is a must. And under that heading, I have to suggest that we define the problem realistically. Funding cuts are very expensive. Any savings we imagine upstream in the realm of human services are lost exponentially downstream. We know this, and now more than ever, we cannot forget it. When we shrink our already fragile senior services network, which includes daycare, nutrition, case management, APS, IHSS, and many other safety net programs, we guarantee an increase in more expensive out-of-home placement. While I understand that money is at the forefront of this conversation, I feel compelled to give a nod to what's right. So before I turn this over to Joyce Ellen, I leave you with the message from senior activist Irene Paul. When we ask for a chance to live our old age in comfort, creativity, and usefulness, we ask it not for ourselves alone, but for you. We are not in a special interest groups. We are your roots. You are our continuity. What we gain is your inheritance. Thank you.
Thank you, and you probably realize that not for ourselves alone is on the, is the county motto. Thank you, Ms. Sampson. Joyce Ellen Lippman, followed by Carol Smith.
Good morning, Ms. Patterson and members of the board. And the
could you speak up, please, towards the little mic there, okay, so they can hear you in the back.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Joyce Lippman, and I'm with the Area Agency on Aging. My job today is to give you a brief overview of the current state of seniors in San Luis Obispo and perhaps to dispel some myths. Seniors in our community are aging. It's not only that we are becoming more older people in our community, and currently 19% of the senior population in San Luis Obispo is over the age of 60, but that will increase by the year 2030 to 22% of our community. And as you will recall, the Tribune did a story a couple of years ago looking at what will San Luis Obispo look like in 20 years, and the predominant demographic was the increasing of the elderly in our community. In addition to just the increase in the elderly, we have the old increasing. Those are those individuals who are over the age of 85 and are more likely to be in need of services and more likely to be frail and dependent on caregivers and other resources in our community. I also want to indicate that older people in our community have the highest rate of suicide. Perhaps the most common myth that I want to take this moment to dispel is regards the economics of being elderly in San Luis Obispo County. We provided for you a copy of a brand new report from UCLA Health Policy Research, and I want to use it as a source to help contrast and dispel the myth that seniors in San Luis Obispo are doing very well financially and that we have relatively poor. We have relatively seen to be poor when using the federal poverty level as our standard. Using that standard, only 9% of our seniors are poor. But that standard does not take into account what the true costs of being elderly are. And UCLA has for the first time presented some really brand new information that I want to share with you. And you've been given a copy. The bottom line of this information is that among seniors in our community, 45% are economically vulnerable. Nearly 50% of the seniors in San Luis Obispo County are economically vulnerable to meet the basic standard index developed by UCLA. And I think this is of critical importance. I hope it shatters for many the image of greedy geezers and people living the golden years in luxury. And if we were permitted, we'd speak a little bit more about ageism in our society. But let me close by just letting you know that Karen Stenson from the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program will be the speaker next month from our group, and she will be talking about the needs of the institutional elderly. And during the 30 days before her performance between now and then, 31 people in our community will become over 85 years of age in San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lipman, and Ms. Smith, if you'll bear with me just a moment. There have been several people entering the chambers here in the last couple of minutes. We are currently in the public comment portion of the agenda where we invite people to speak on items not on the agenda, and if you are here to speak during public comment, please get your request in now. Okay, thank you, Ms. Smith. Carry on.
Hi, good morning. My name is Carol Smith, and I'm from Homestead Senior Care.
Please project into the mic. Thank you.
Company here in San Luis Obispo County. And I'm here with a little can-do attitude that Helen was talking about earlier about how to help our seniors. And we're presenting a fundraiser movie night on March 19th at the Fair Oaks Theater in Arroyo Grande. And this is to help support the benefits for LifeSteps Foundation's Linkages Program, a nonprofit 501c3 human services agency. The Linkages Program, once again in the community, is to assist our frail, elderly, and disabled clients to avoid premature and inappropriate institutionalization. The clients of Linkages want to remain living in their homes as long as possible, and Linkages provides the care management and information, referral services. It helps them with housing issues, medical treatment, nutrition, government programs, and much more. Linkages helps them stay safe and independent at home. This program is designed to be a gap filler, which assists individuals who are not otherwise receiving care management services. Linkages is one of many programs run by the LifeSteps Foundation. They do receive funding from the Area on Aging, but such funds are limited each year. There are as many as maybe 80 people waiting on the list for services, most of them low and moderate income individuals. Some have been waiting almost a year for these services. Consequently, many people who need service in these areas have to go without. Given the limitations of our resources and the magnitude of the need, we welcome support from the community in fulfilling the essentials of our program and expanding our capacity to better serve our clients. So with that in mind, we have a special screening of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which will be shown once again at the Fair Oaks Theater in Arroyo Grande. I do have tickets available. They're $20 a piece. It's going to provide popcorn, soda, and we're going to have raffles that are gifts from businesses throughout our community. There's going to be lots of prizes there, so we would love for everyone to come. Once again, it's March 19th at 6:45 p.m., and we'd like anyone who's interested in purchasing tickets to call our office at Homestead, which is 773-3744, and we can arrange to get you some tickets. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, and I want to thank all of you for coming this morning and sharing that information with us. Certainly the county does face some serious budget challenges this year and in the next couple of years, and so we'll be working very hard to see that we don't let anybody fall through the cracks. So thank you for coming. Supervisor Ovett.
Thank you, Jim. Most of you probably noticed there's a seat vacant here today. I'm sorry. I didn't know that it hadn't been announced. But
I was waiting until 9 o'clock so it would go out on the radio as well.
Is it 9 o'clock?
9:02.
I was just going to say that Bruce is in the hospital. He's having a heart valve operation. We will probably miss him for the next couple of weeks. And all I wanted to say is, along with you, our prayers go out for his healthy and speedy recovery.
Yes, thank you, Supervisor Ovid. I did want to make that announcement. I was waiting until we were on the air. Those of you viewing can see that we have an empty seat here between Harry and I, and Supervisor Bruce Gibson, as Supervisor Ovid mentioned, is currently having an aortic valve replacement as we speak. He's in French Hospital. This is the same Bruce Gibson who participated in Bike to Work Week last year, riding in from Cayucas. He has suffered no symptoms, just a routine checkup, diagnosed this problem, and we do expect him back, wish him a speedy recovery, and hope to see him here in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And I just want to remind Bruce, as I have already, that Bike to Work Week is only 8 weeks away. So Godspeed in your recovery. So we wish him well. With Mr. that, Chair, Supervisor Sajjan?
I think we both also want to wish Bruce a speedy recovery. He is in our thoughts and prayers.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll move on with our regular agenda here, and that would be if I can find it, item C1. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the item, please?
Your first hearing today is item C1. This is a hearing to consider and introduce an ordinance establishing the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Business Improvement District, fixing the boundaries and providing for the levy of business assessment. This item was continued from February 26, 2008. The recommendation today is to continue the item off calendar.
That is the recommendation. Mr. Ed.
I could see you were looking around for my staff, Mr. Chairman.
And there you are.
And here I am.
They're doing budget work.
They're doing budget work upstairs. I think the item is self-explanatory. It's a follow-up to a hearing that you had, or a discussion that you had last week on this item. We do have some concerns after reviewing the process that we used that the noticing part was not fully done, and that we really feel in an abundance of caution we need to go through that noticing process again. That was our initial reason for recommending taking this off calendar. Since that time, and at your hearing last week, or your discussions last week, I think there's been a number of discussions about the various different groups who spoke last week going away and trying to get together with an approach and a recommendation for some kind of business improvement district for the tourist industry that will be more consensual than what had been proposed at this point. From a staff perspective, we're not vested either way. We would ask that the board, after hearing public testimony, gives us a specific direction on that, either to reinitiate the process of notice and bring the original proposal back, or to basically turn it over to the industry and let them do their own thing, so to speak, and tell us when they're ready to bring it back and try again.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Edge. Are there any comments from my colleagues at this point? If not, I'll open it to the public. I have a number of requests to speak on this item, and even though the recommendation is to continue it, it has been noticed as a hearing, and so we will carry forward in that vein. So let me call those that have requested to speak on this item forward. We'll begin with Noreen Martin, followed by Susan Lyon. So please come forward.
My name is Noreen Martin, and I have, Martin Resorts and commercial businesses inside the city of San Luis. I was hoping to go after the vacation rentals because I have spoke with a couple of them, and I do know that they're unhappy over the BID going forward, and I was kind of hoping to address a couple of the things they were possibly going to say. But I do believe we have some bridge building to do with the BID. I do believe that if it is a definite tourism economic engine in our county, that this is a very serious issue. And that's why I was a part of a letter that came out to you asking for this to be continued. The Environmental Impact Committee, Mike Manchek leads that group, has arranged for at each city in this county to be a part of an assessment of how much the hotel industry truly participates and how much the economic engine we can actually count on us to perform for our county. If we're going to be deemed, along with other tourism in this county, as an economic engine for jobs, that's serious. And I do want the vacation rental people to be addressed. They need to see that they're a part of this, that they're a major factor. Because I was the guy that assisted in starting the wine industry, but I was a very small portion of it. I watched through that collective people coming together and the big guys coming in, Jay Lohr by name and Meridian by name. They paid a much higher due than I did as the small, small-sized winery. But what happened in that is they collectively assessed one another, brought about an economic engine for our county. I personally am maybe idealistic. I've been seen as a visionary before my time in my history, but I believe it's possible within the hotel industry and that no one should be left out. They do have a major factor. We need to bridge that gap, and I would that's why I was a part of asking for the letter. The EVC assessment, hotel assessment that's going out, I'd like to ask Mike Manchek for the vacation rentals to be a part of that assessment. Because when we are successful, they will be successful. There's not a piggyback company in our county that doesn't benefit from the benefit of all of us. So that's why I would ask for we to go forward with this 180 days for us to reevaluate, for us to come together in a consensus and give us that time to be able to do so. And I would request that extension. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Susan Lyon, followed by Layla Coleman.
Hi, I'm Susan Lyon from Cottontail Creek Ranch, and I spoke here at the last hearing. Could you repeat the two options that you have before you today? I didn't.
Taking the item off calendar, the only question for the board, do they want us to begin the process of noticing the existing proposal, or take it off calendar with a direction to the industry and the interested people to get together and bring back to us a different proposal?
So it's consensus-driven, industry-driven.
That okay. would be the other option,
so
yes.
So I'm here to say I support item two.
An item before us today, Ms. Lyon, and if we can pause this for a minute, just to make it clear, because it may not be... We're pulling the item because it was improperly noticed.
Exactly.
And we need to re-notice before we continue the process. And as Mr. Redd said, do we just begin re-noticing and move forward, or do we continue it off calendar to such point that the industry comes back and asks us to re-initiate and re-notice? So that's really the question before us this morning.
Exactly. And the people that I've talked to would like to see it come back to you from the industry and consensus-driven. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The next speaker, Layla Coleman, followed by Carolyn Stewart Snow.
Hi, it's Layla Coleman.
Okay.
I have the Shoreline Inn in Cayucas, and in working on this bid issue, I've had the chance to talk to a lot of motel owners, and I do support the staff's decision in if this to put an end to the way it was mailed, but I would support your so-called decision number two for consensus. In speaking to several establishments, I'm sorry that not all of them can be here, but they are small owners and it's difficult for them to get away. but I do want to show you that. But I do have petitions from them, which we can save for another time, in opposing the bid program. But it's as it was stated before. And what I'd like to do now is ask for a show of hands on how many people are here that would like to stop the process as it is and bring it back when there's consensus from the industry. So in the future, I really believe that not enough people were informed about this entire bid process. I sat in on meetings when this whole thing began. It changed as the process went on, and so there really needs to be better education techniques for the businesses out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Coleman. Carolyn Stewart Snow, followed by Nicole Cavier.
In favor of the second option.
Speak loudly,
okay.
Please.
And
your name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Carolyn Stewart Snow, and I'm from Chanticleer Vineyard Bed and Breakfast in Paso Robles, California. And I'm also in support of the second option. I'm going to go ahead and just read this because I have so many ideas. I'll just read it. So anyway, I'm not saying I'm opposed to a method of raising revenue to promote tourism, but at this point, this plan is not cohesive and there is not a consensus in the lodging community. There's been no attempt to sell me this program or to bring on board the little people, and this concerns me. Instead, there's been a full-speed ahead mentality and a forced urgency, which is probably what's creating the split in the first place. We didn't have an opportunity to vote on this, and that puts us on the defensive, and we're put on the defensive in the appeal process. It's human nature to resist when you feel like you're being forced. Instead of having 3 years to organize, at best we've had 2 months to attempt to contact and solicit support from our peers. As a small 1-3 room B&B, we're very different than larger hotel motel businesses, and even different than 8-10 room B&Bs. We're mainly a one-person operation, and growth is self-limiting. Unlike larger operations, 100% occupancy is not our goal, although we do want occupancy. And the larger operations obviously dilute our lodging pool. I get a sense that someone just wants us to write the check and support this process when we don't feel we're being really represented. I had been a member of the San Luis Visitors Bureau in the past and had dropped out for that same reason. I didn't feel like I was being heard as being small, and also being in the North County, I didn't feel I was well represented. And I feel like if there's been no attempt to change that perception, there's been no attempt to change my perception and others like me, why would that change after I've already given them my check? And then lastly, because the BID doesn't represent other businesses like restaurants, wineries, limo services, and retail, that would also benefit from this tourism. The other businesses can't participate because they're not part of the lodging community. This just targets the lodging community, and I don't think that's fair to them or to us. And this is a copy of the protest that I have accumulated, and there would have been more people here. The article that was in the newspaper last week made people think that this was a tabled item and that there was no point in coming, and it is difficult for single operations to make a presence here. Thank you.
Thank you. Nicole Cavier and Shirley, it looks like Lynn, perhaps. I'll let you clarify that. I'm sure you know who you are. You're on deck. Nicole, and you may want to correct my pronunciation.
Yeah, Nicole Cavier.
Okay.
My husband and I own Almond Hill Vineyard Bed and Breakfast in Paso Robles. We have a small vineyard, and our B&B actually is just one small suite. It's also a vacation rental because it has a kitchenette. And at this point, I'm almost booked as much as I want to be booked, and I just don't feel that I need to be paying another tax to advertise for business that, you know, I keep saying no to people who call me because I'm already booked. And I think some of the smaller businesses, I'm not sure this is a good idea. I'm already spending money, membership with the chamber, which is doing a good job for me. And to put all the B&Bs into one lump, I just don't think it's right for some of us. So I'm not sure exactly what this is all about, but I would like to have it postponed for the time being until we can learn a little more about it. I also don't feel that it's quite fair to just be the lodging facilities that are being this tax is added to. I think there's other businesses that should be involved with it. And I am for continuing the process to learn more about it before it's become voted on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Shirley? And she will be followed by Nan Moss.
Hi, my name is Shirley Lyon, and I own a vacation rental business in Cayucas, and it seems like I'm here very often on this subject. In any event, I certainly support the second option for the board, and I would hope that before this would come back again to your board, that there is a consensus formed by the Visitors Bureau or whatever organization would be doing this, so that they would actually have a plan, a contract, some viable thing that we could all look at and maybe embrace. I don't think that it's, I think we should have a consensus of all the businesses that are supported by tourism and not just the lodging industry. So I hope that you'll take this very seriously. There are a lot of people that are opposed to this. I have a lot of protests here that because they felt that they weren't a participant in the decisions and so forth. And so I think that I hope that you'll take it very seriously and let it come back again in a different form. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Lyon. Nan Moss, followed by Karen Palmer.
I'm Nan Moss, and I'm owner with my husband of Le Domaine Bed and Breakfast in Paso Robles. And I also echo many of the comments of the former speakers and agree with option two, especially in supporting the second option. We have a small bed and breakfast, and for the most part are as busy as we need to be. But with economic conditions as they are currently, things change, and we certainly want to support tourism in the area. If the bid goes forward, I think that all of the supporters of the bid would agree that they want it to be as successful as possible, and in that case, we would want to have the consensus of all the businesses that support tourism, as the previous speaker just mentioned. And I think the additional time and focus on the issue and generating the consensus would be appropriate because, you know, if the term, if you build it, they will come, that would be nice, because if they come, that will be the benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Karen Palmer, followed by Joan Solu.
Good morning, supervisors and chairman. I'm Karen Palmer. I'm employed at the Best Western Colony Inn in Atascadero, and I am actually here to support the first option of renoticing. As you know, the majority of the hotels in Atascadero, Morro Bay, and Arroyo Grande have supported the process of the BID moving forward, and we have been patient during this process. We feel that we understand that there would be a delay in the renoticing, but we would like to continue moving forward with this process. And I would also like to express, with the amount of new hotel rooms that we have recently seen in Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo, we have definitely felt an impact in Atascadero, especially this last weekend with the large wine festival in Paso Robles, that normally the overflow comes to Atascadero and we would be sold out, and that just wasn't the case this past weekend. So it is a sense of urgency to keep moving forward with this process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. John Solo?
I don't think John is.
Joan Solu, not John, can you tell? John is my husband. Some of you probably know him. First of all, my husband and I own the Days Inn in Morro Bay, which is a 58-room motel, and we have owned motels up and down the coast of California between Solvang and Morro Bay, excuse my voice, for quite some time. I just want you to know that we are in full support of the BID and support for renoticing the BID. Because of the error that was made, people were not noticed properly, and we really do want to get the notice out there properly. This process has been a long process, and I was sitting here thinking about what people were saying, and I was thinking about what's happened since this process has started. My very first time that I sat in on a BID meeting, I remember sitting there, and I had a packet to enroll my second child in kindergarten. I now have that child is a second grader, and I remember that morning I had dropped off my high schooler, and he's off to college. So this has been a long process. There's been years for people to step up. I think that there are a lot of people in support, and I think you have probably already received the support notices, plenty of petitions from there. The BID is going to establish and create a solution for us as hoteliers to drive business for the entire county. That is the advertising force that will be behind that. If we fill those hotel rooms, those restaurants are full, those shops are full, people will buy t-shirts and sweatshirts and postcards, and they're going to stop at Food for Less and buy soda, and they're going to stop at Albertsons and, you know, buy snacks for the road. They're going to buy a lunch to hike out at Montaña de Oro. We fill those hotel rooms. It's a clean industry that is dependent on advertising. And I think that a majority of the people that I talk to who are not hoteliers, restaurateurs, and other entrepreneurs fully support this because it would be used to drive their business too once we got people in. I think that a majority of the people support it. And I think now that we're in the end of the process, it is time for people to stand up and say that they disagree, and that's part of the process too. My question for you is, how often do you come to a unanimous decision? You need to think about that too. How often do you all as a board come to a unanimous decision? And I think that if you consider it and just put it for a support for renoticing and you give us the 180-day extension, I think it's going to come full force forward to you and everybody's going to be happy. Thank you very much for taking time.
Thank you, Ms. Solu. That was my last request to speak, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues to chime in. Supervisor Ovid.
Yeah, I think the first thing that should be probably realized is that the county is forming or been requested by the industry to form this BID. It's not us going out and doing it. And so we pretty much looked at what was presented. I think in the conversations that I've had with a number of people in the industry over the last, I don't know, it's been at least more than 6 months since it's been brought before us, there is some definite issues that need to be taken care of. And the continuance, I think, will give you that time frame. I do disagree with continuing off calendar. I don't think we need to renotice it now, but if a motion were made, or I'll make the motion, to continue it, but to report back to us in 6 months with whatever progress, because if we tend to continue it off calendar, then some of those people just wander away and don't try to resolve those issues that I think face this industry.
Thank you, Mr. Ovett. Supervisor Linthal?
Supervisor Ovett covered one of the points that I want to make was I think this needs to have a definite date. 6 months, 180 days certainly seems appropriate. I do believe it's consensus-driven. If that was a motion to come back, if the clerk says whatever 180 days,
I think bring it back, if you would, and I'll make a motion to bring it back in 180 days for a report of a status report on the BID.
Second.
Point of clarification, just a status report, or do you want to notice it as a hearing? Or
no, I think we need to understand where the industry is. In conversation we've had, and I leave this to the industry to figure it out, whether we segregate out various portions of the hotelier business, whether you bring it all in as one unit, if there's others that want to join it. Maybe the fact is that the ordinance needs to say the county has the right to bid, go out to bid for this process, instead of an exclusive right. There's all of these things that we can discuss.
Okay.
It should be discussed by the industry.
Okay. Supervisor Asajan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even though it's not often that we're unanimous here among five of us, but we often do have the majority. And I'm looking for the majority within the cities, and I spent a little time with Ms. Biagini talking of that majority. But since our last meeting, there has been some changes, even those who were in front of us supporting what has been brought to our attention. But going back to what Ms. Martin said, that makes a lot of sense coming myself from a small business, or a small businessman myself, trying to bring the vast majority together, because our county, as you know, it's pretty a lot of distance, just if you are on the other side of the great, as if you're in another world, and then go further south county when you have two neighboring cities, Pismo and Roy Organi, let's say, that's not on the same page, somehow does disturb me. But going back to say that we need to bridge the gap, and you are the folks who can deal with it best, I am for continuation. I think putting a date, it does force all of us to concentrate and bring it back, but with the idea that you will come back with some consensus building effort.
Okay, thank you.
Rather than just drop it in our lap, that right. Let your board decide. It's nice to do something for the industry that's coming from the industry.
Right, and I certainly concur with my colleagues here. You have a consensus. And it's not all that uncommon, really. But I want to make a couple of comments. I'm concerned about the 180-day continuance. That's 6 months. Given 6 months, they'll take 6 months. I'd like to see perhaps something a little bit shorter, like 90 days. And the reason I say that is because Pismo Beach and San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles are all individually considering doing their own BID and moving forward independently of everybody else, basically. And I don't necessarily think for a moment that there's going to be a unanimous agreement among members of the industry. I was in retail business for 15 years, and I was up against the big guys. And I understand the value in working with other small independents to get that economy of scale that you need to have to compete at another level, really. And so I think there's some value in pursuing that. Whether or not you agree or whether or not it fits your particular business is another issue, and it's something that you need to work out. And there's been discussion here recently about separating out some of the businesses that don't feel they'll achieve value in joining together in this effort. But Ms. Martin spoke of the Economic Vitality Corporation, and I'm a member of the Economic Trends Committee that she spoke of, and we are currently doing an assessment of the tourism industry in San Luis Obispo County. It's second only to agriculture as an economic force in San Luis Obispo County, and I think we need to work together to build the potential there, and this is certainly one way to do that. So I think that it's to the county's benefit as a whole to implement a program that we've discussed here. How that's done, the details of it, I can't say. That's for the people in the industry to decide. And I would like to see that effort continue because we are competing against other Central Coast counties for a limited dollar. And tourism is a clean industry, and we need to encourage that as much as we can. So I will support the motion. However, might I suggest that we reduce that time frame? A tremendous amount of work has been done already. It's been in process at least 2 years. It's changed in response to comments from people in the industry, and I think change for the better, but we're still not there. And, you know, if my colleagues feel that a shorter time frame is appropriate, again, I don't think we need 6 months to decide whether or not we're going to get together on this or not. Once we come back in 6 months for a status report, then we have to decide what we're going to do, and if that involves noticing, that's another 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and pretty soon everybody's got their BIDs up and running except us. So anyway, that would be my comment. Supervisor Lenthal, followed by Supervisor Sajjan.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate it, and I wish we could maybe have a magic wand and make it 90 days, but we heard testimony, and through some of the contact I've had meeting with people in my office, that the stakeholders and those that are going to be doing all the heavy lifting here had asked for 6 months. Now, there's some bridge building, fence building, whatever else you want to call it. I think because they asked for 6 months, and the burden really is on them to put this together, it's not necessarily a county-driven project, that we yield to the people that are out there doing the work, and if they ask for 6 months, we give them 6 months.
Yes, you're right, and I guess they can come back sooner if they don't need the 6 months, so we can throw
can
that out
down.
There, too. You're
sure.
Not encumbered that way. Supervisor Sajjan, followed by Supervisor Ovid.
I was just thinking that would set a precedent here. We talk about 90 days or 6 months. I was going to offer 18 weeks. And
the man in the middle.
And if the motion maker will go for it, then we're done. Maybe they'll come back with the same attitude to work together.
In consulting the county and the counter, 90 days is the middle of our budget problems, and we've got major issues with that. And
that's
again, Lenthal said the request to us was 180 days, and I have a date of September 16th that I would like to continue to that. And, of course, if any time in between that there's a solution is reached or consensus comes to it, we can bring that back without any trouble.
The problem is that in between we'll have a lot of requests, a lot of items moving forward to be scheduled. That can create a problem if we don't have a date certain.
Well, that's why the date's certain, September 16th.
Okay, so we'll amend the motion to include a date certain of September
16th.
Okay, the second concurs. And I'll just again point out that you can come back sooner if you like. You don't have to take the full 6 months. But, of course, you have to clear that with the clerk.
Put it on her phone. Right?
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Requires a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you all for coming down. With that, we'll move on to item C2. Madam Clerk, would you introduce that item, please?
Next item on your agenda is item C2. This is a hearing to consider an appeal by Troy and Christine Rudman of the Templeton Road Improvement Fee in the 1st District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Staff report?
Light on. No, the left one. The left one. Right.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. Scott Duffield, Public Works Department, Development Services Division. Before I present the staff report, it came to my attention that the map included with the report did not come across in copy, so I don't know if you have any information to be looking at that we're referencing in most of our issues here. Thanks, Richard. I came here actually was going to talk about each one of the specific points that the applicant has brought up on why they are appealing their road fee. And I'll just kind of further summarize, I guess, all the ones that are paraphrased in the staff report. Most of them involve items like we're in the Paso Robles School District. Utility purveyors and stuff are through Paso Robles. And most of their shopping and travel is done in Paso Robles. Just to clarify, the road fee boundaries are separate and independent from all these items, school district boundaries. Addresses was another one, Paso Robles address, Templeton road fee boundaries do not necessarily coincide all the time. They do sometimes, but not all the time. So the main point in this case is the first item that's in the staff report is that they are so close to Paso Robles. In fact, they're about a mile from the city limits, and that they travel strictly through Paso Robles to get to their property. Our response to these, and they're kind of, like I said, all the same response, is that they are, despite all these items, they are, in fact, in the road fee boundary area, which coincides with the circulation study that's updated every year. And these boundaries were and have been the same since the inception of the road fee for Templeton in 1990-91. So, and you can see that on your screen, which is the boundary in the detail area. One thing I maybe should add is that the properties directly across the street from the Redmonds obviously are not in the road fee boundary. So basically, at the staff level, it was not for us to determine should you pay the fee or should you not pay the fee. So in summary, we're pretty much talking about a boundary issue and should they or should they not be subject to the road fee. With that, I can attempt to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions from members of the board for staff? I see none at this point, so we'll defer to later, and we'll now offer the appellant an opportunity to present their case.
Thank you. I am Troy Rudman. I live at 1620 Peach Canyon Road. A little bit nervous here. First time I've done something like this. But just to give you a little history of how we ended up here today, my wife and I started discussing back in 2005, 2006 about putting a secondary residence on our property for her parents to be able to downsize and have something relatively comfortable and less maintenance than where they're at. It was going to be kind of a retirement opportunity for them. We looked at doing a manufactured home. At that time, we were only authorized up to 800 square feet, but then I guess the county code section went up to 1,200 square feet for a secondary residence, and it allowed us the opportunity for them to move onto our property, downsize, and then also sell their property, which is in rural Templeton, to be able to have some money to increase their retirement income. So back in December, we decided to go ahead, submitted the permit to do the secondary residence, and then on January 15th, we received a letter from the Department of Public Works, dated 1/11, about informing us that our permit application was subject to the county's road improvement fees for Templeton Area B. And at that time, the road improvement fees were $6,570, but they were informing us that they were increasing to $10,802 on the 27th of January. We didn't have to pay the fees until we were ready to actually draw our permit and start construction, but I became very concerned when I saw first the $6,500 and then it was going up. So I decided that I needed to do some follow-up on this. It was around the 16th or 17th I contacted Mr. Duffield, talked about the project that we were considering and that trying to figure out where these fees came from or what it was. And that's when I discovered that we were in this Templeton Area B for road impact fees. And it was right on the edge. People across the street from me weren't in this fee area. And there's been quite a bit of development across the road up Old Settler and whatnot, and come to find out they weren't in the fee area. So I asked how this came about. He put me in touch with Greg Honeycutt, which I contacted, and apparently it was due to some traffic flow studies or something back in 91, and they came up with the fee boundaries at that time. After talking to Mr. Dufeld and Mr. Honeycutt, I got the impression that I had a pretty strong case to appeal the fees. So at that point, after speaking with them, I contacted First Legislative Assistant Cliff Smith out of Mr. Ovitz's office and discussed the situation, and we decided to go ahead and appeal the fees. So obviously we were concerned about if we went ahead and put in our application for the filed for the appeal, whether or not we were going to get to, if we didn't pay the fees, we were in this dilemma that our appeal wouldn't be heard until well after the fees increased. So everybody worked with us. We tried to get an answer, whether we, if we applied, put our filing in ahead of time, whether we would still be able to go. And we couldn't get a solid answer, so rather than gamble it, I went ahead and took an advance on an HELOC and paid the fees up front. And then the next day, on the 24th, I went ahead and filed for the appeal. So that got us to where we're at today. And like I say, I got a strong impression that, you know, I had a pretty good case to appeal the fees, because it seemed kind of strange where the lines were drawn and how if you're familiar with that area, Peachy Canyon, how the traffic would flow naturally. And, of course, I understand that staff, you know, they're pretty much have to go by black and white. What does the code section say? So just to kind of briefly go over some of their points there, they did point out that the Slo County Code 13.01.050 states that an adjustment or waiver of the fee may be granted based on the absence of any reasonable relationship or nexus between the traffic-generating impacts of that new development and either the amount of the fees imposed or the type of road facilities or improvement to be financed by the fee. My understanding of the fee is to improve this Highway 46-101 corridor for all the development that may be taking and impacting that. And I think it's pretty obvious from the maps and everything that it would be that it's not going to really ours. You'd have to really go out of your way to impact that area there. I don't know if the map can be shown again there, but one of the things on appeal point number one, their response to it was basically they go into how the traffic flow came into this, the boundaries were drawn up, and it says that the road improvement fee is used for major improvements that are expected to be needed for major arterial and collector roads throughout the community, including needed improvements to all points of access to Highway 101. Peachy Canyon Road is a collector road that provides traffic circulation from 101 westerly to Vineyard Drive and Highway 46 corridor. Since the property may be accessed from Highway 46 West corridor, residents would benefit from the improvement of the road fee area. I don't know if you've ever driven out Peachy Canyon Road or not, but I'm only a mile. My property is where Old Settler Road runs right into Peachy Canyon, barely a mile past the city limits, past Robles. If you go past my house, it's a very twisty, windy road. I admit I ride a bicycle out there once in a while, but that's because there's very little traffic out there. And I cannot think of the last time that I've ever turned right on my driveway and went that direction, or anybody else coming from that area. So I think that's kind of the reasonableness there, that there's not really a nexus there, I think is pretty valid. Then on the next point, some of their other points that they talk about, my appeal point about the property right across, and again they go back to just bottom line is that's where the lines are drawn. It seems kind of strange that the people right across the street from me are not in the fee area, and I am. And so that's another point there. Then the last point was about the mailing address. I understand, you know, my wife is a teacher in Paso Robles. She drives right down Peachy Canyon. She's 3 miles from her house. If we were to follow the logic of this using Peachy Canyon, I went ahead and drove it out. It's 9.1 miles from our house to Vineyard, and then it's another 12 miles from the Vineyard Peachy Canyon intersection back to Paso Robles if you were to go down Vineyard to 46 and then back around. So it would be a 22-mile drive and take about 40 minutes to drive if you were following the logic of us feeding into this fee area. So just not really sure how the boundaries were actually decided, but I think that anybody familiar with the area would not think it's very reasonable that development on our property would generate traffic flowing into or out of the Highway 46 West corridor via Vineyard Drive. And like I say, I'm not opposed to paying these fees if the development truly had some sort of impact on the Templeton Road Improvement fee area. I believe it's reasonable to conclude that there is no relationship or nexus between our traffic generating impact and these fees. So I'm just appealing to you to go ahead and approve my my appeal. And I believe, I don't know if my wife's here for, I don't think you didn't want to say anything. And then my mother-in-law, I think, I don't know if it would be more appropriate for the public comment period if she would like to read something into the record. I don't know if I need to do that or not, but if you'd like her to do it during my time period, that's...
Well, we're about up on your time, but they're certainly welcome to speak during public comment.
Okay.
We
during
will afford
comment.
Them that opportunity, Mr. Rudman. Before you step down,
yes.
Have you completed your presentation?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Are there any questions at this point for Mr. Rudman from my colleagues?
I'll hold it till the comments.
Okay. Fine. Then we will... Then open it to public comment. I have no request to speak, but if you ladies would like to speak, this is the appropriate time to do that. And before you leave, if you would fill one of these out and give them to us, we would appreciate it. But you may come forward now at this point and speak to the board. And these are available in the back of the room.
My name is Ruth Hart, and I'm reading a letter from my husband who has to work today, these economic times, and that's why we're squabbling over the money here. It's difficult. This is my husband's letter. I would like to comment in support of Troy Rudman's appeal of road fees for the secondary home being installed on Peachy Canyon Road in Paso Robles. I am Gramps, that will be living in this house with my granny wife. The staff reply uses the term reasonable several times in its response to Troy's concerns. My question is it reasonable to request a fee of approximately $6,500 on a small, modest, manufactured house that costs $48,000? That is almost 14%. In fact, it has been raised recently to over $10,000. That is over 20%, hardly reasonable. My second question on the reasonableness of the situation is on fairness. There is a winery within several hundred yards down Peachy Canyon Road of our project, who, despite major improvements, has not paid 1 cent in road fees, and you know how much traffic they use. This is because the boundary of the district was for some reason set as a straight line up Peachy Canyon. This results in one person on the road paying thousands in road fees and their neighbor nothing. Not very reasonable, since it is a road fee. My third concern is that the staff says that the fees are to address the Vineyard Highway 46 access. I can only assume they feel we will, for some reason, be driving west up Peachy Canyon to get on Vineyard south to Highway 46. I can't think of a single situation when we, or any other person living on Peachy Canyon, would be inclined to take this route. Granny and I will be moving from East Templeton, where we have much more of an impact on the Vineyard 46 interchange than we will when we move to Peachy Canyon. I think that in light of the above, If a fee is assessed, it should be much smaller to be reasonable and proportioned to the proposed project. Thank you for your consideration. I listen to you every week on KCBX, and it is, excuse the politics, audacity of hope that I could meet before a governing body that I know to be fair, because we do listen to you folks, and I thank you for your time and effort in our direction.
Thank you, Ms. Hart, and if I may, it's pledge week at KCBX, and put a plug in for the Board of Supervisors, if you would. Well, at least let them know that you listen to the Board of Supervisors.
It has to be more local.
Okay.
You guys, it's cheaper in Royal Grande than Templeton.
Thank you. Mrs. Redmond, any more public comment? Eric Greening?
Thank you. You've probably heard me... I am Eric Greening, and you've probably heard me raise these issues before. I continue to believe that when we depend on residences for road funding instead of gas tanks and vehicle purchases, we are actually encouraging stupid growth and discouraging alternate transportation. The cost of roads should be paid for at the gas pump, and it should be paid for when one registers a car. That said, you might be interested to know that our Council of Governments is going to be looking at our dysfunctional system for paying for transportation and perhaps looking outside the box. One of the items on their meeting of Wednesday, April 2nd, is going to be something called the Supplemental Funding Steering Committee Findings. It will be heard in this room on the morning of April 2nd. And so those who have an interest in, from whatever perspective, how we ought to be funding our transportation system, certainly right now we have a situation where no one's asking whether there are no cars, one car, or five cars at a residence. A fee is simply assessed against that residence. There is absolutely no incentive in this system for carpooling, no incentive for transit use, bicycles, or feet. It doesn't matter whether you use your feet every day. You pay the same fee as a family that has five cars. And that has got to change if we're serious about containing our vehicle miles traveled. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening, for raising those issues. You're absolutely right. But until we resolve the issue and find a more equitable way to fund our roads, this is what we have in place, and this is what we've been using. But obviously, it needs some revision in my mind as well. That was my last request to speak, so I'll bring the issue back to the board for questions for the appellant and or staff and action. So, Supervisor Ovitt, your
Thank
light's
you.
On.
I want to deal with this in 2 cents. First of all, Mr. Greening, we do use taxes on gasoline. The problem is we have another legislative body that likes to keep taking it away from us. So we'll have to deal with them, too. On the issue here, first of all, it ceases to amaze me that every time I see this map, it keeps growing, and I don't know why. Because when I looked at the map, and if you want to bring it back up, I'll show you another cases where we're going to see this again if it happens. If you look at the upper part of that gray area, Mountain Springs Road does not even connect back to Vineyard or even has any hope of getting that way. I know we've tried. So the issue of nexus is probably the biggest reason I have here. Where these people live, and it is true, that Peachy Canyon Road, it goes up to a peak and then falls back off the other side. And I'm not sure why back in the 90s that when they put this Area B up or this was added in. So the first part of this would be to uphold the appeal based on the finding that I don't see any nexus and move to grant the upholding of that appeal. And the second is to instruct staff before this comes back, I think we go somewhere October, September, to relook at these external boundaries of this Area B because this has also brought us an issue with last week. But so my motion at this particular time is to uphold the appeal based on that I find no nexus under AB 1600. Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we uphold the appeal, and I'll ask for discussion. I have some questions that I'd like to pursue before we take our vote. Madam Clerk, if you'd put the map up again, I have a question for Public Works staff, whether it's whichever gentleman wants to respond to that. There was reference made repeatedly to the improvements of the area around 46 West and Vineyard, and it's my understanding, though, that it's really applied to all the rural county roads in the area that will experience an increased traffic flow from development in that area. And I want to know if that's an accurate assessment. It's just, you know, really utilized for any improvements in the area. Now, I may be wrong. If I am, I'd like clarification there. Also, I have an issue with the way the boundary was drawn down the middle of a road rather than encompassing properties on both sides of the road, because development on both sides of the road will impact the road. And so I think it was an inappropriately drawn boundary. And so if you could address those two issues, I would appreciate it. And it looks like, Mr. Marshall, you're there to do that.
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson, members of the board. I am Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I want to thank Scott Duffield for presenting the item to you today, and he's done a valiant attempt to explain the results of my work product from about 17 years ago. So I commend him for his efforts, but I'm really the one that needs to take the blows at this point. The boundary is what it is, and how it came to be was it was essentially my attempt as a, you know, I was this high at the time. And
fresh out of engineering school, I'm sure.
Fresh out of engineering school where they didn't talk about
conservative ties.
I had better ties. it was an attempt to define the term I like to use is the traffic shed of the areas that would feed into the roads in the Templeton community, including Highway 46 West. It's fairly clear that there's some room for adjustment in this neighborhood, and I think I would be in support of the motion as it stands. I think it's clear that there's room to adjust this and do a better job, but we didn't feel that we could just grant that at the staff level without having this conversation with your board through the appeal process. So I thank you for your indulgence on that. In terms of what things are paid for with the fees, it actually is a defined capital improvement program that's published in the circulation study, and it does not include every single county road within the boundary, just certain defined major projects that are programmed over the life of the build-out of the general plan.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. If I may follow up, Mr. Marshall, it was pointed out that there has been development on the side of the road that isn't assessed any traffic impact fee, and that's obviously not reasonable or equitable or fair. Is it your intent to readjust those boundaries, or bring that back to us at a later date?
Right. The motion is in the same direction as I would have recommended, which is that as a function of bringing back the annual update of the circulation study, we'll make a recommendation to you for a revision to the boundary.
Okay, and one final question. Have people along that section of road recently paid traffic impact fees for development, and are we likely to have people coming in here asking for refunds if we don't apply the fee to others?
I think we have looked into that, and what I think I recall, and Scott can back me up on this, there have been some payments in this vicinity, but I don't believe they were especially recent. While the fees were quite a bit lower, folks just kind of treated it as part of the price of doing business and didn't really pursue it any further. I don't anticipate.
I think some of those are like Oakdale Road or off of Vineyard. that I personally heard about, which are more inclined to use 46. I have not yet had anybody from Mountain Springs Road or Peachy Canyon. It's the first one on Peachy Canyon. And that was my reaction first time I saw it. I go, what? And,
yeah,
you know, so.
The only other one that I know of that's similar is there's some folks who have expressed concern about the boundary on the totally opposite side of the circulation study. And so your board will have the opportunity to have a similar conversation coming up. And then we can roll that adjustment all together with the circulation update.
Great.
And the Timberland Advisory has a traffic subcommittee that deals with this annually, so we'll make a recommendation through that.
Good deal. Thank you. That answers my questions. I have no more requests from my colleagues, so with that, I'll call for the motion. It's a voice vote, so all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Staff members, thank you. Appreciate it. And good deal. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Do you want to? Okay. With that, we're going to take a short break and return at 10:15. Okay, we'll continue the meeting. Item C3, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the item, please?
Yeah, item C3 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Coker Ellsworth of the Planning Commission's denial of his request for a conditional use permit, SUB 2004-00160, and for a vesting tentative tract map for tract 2424 to subdivide an existing 1.69-acre parcel into 23 lots located on the east side of South Halcyon Road at Temple Street, approximately 400 feet south of the Pike, south of the city of Aurora Grande in the 4th District. Recommendation was for denial of the appeal. Your board does have a request to continue this matter by the applicant for 120 days. We did look at a calendar, and that looks like it would be around July 22nd, if your board wishes to do that.
Okay, thank you, Madam Clerk. With that, I'll ask staff to give a brief update report before we move to public comment. We do have some requests to speak on this item, and since it is a hearing, even though the applicant has asked for a continuance, we will take public comment. So, staff, if you'd like to proceed.
Good morning, Marcia Lee, staff planner. The applicant has requested a 120-day continuance to address the staff report comments, and this brings it to July 22nd, 2008.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lee. Any questions from members of the board for staff? Is the applicant here?
Yes, in the back, last room.
Okay, would you like to take this opportunity to speak, or are you satisfied with the staff's comments? Okay, the applicant states that he's satisfied with staff's report, asking for continuance until July 22nd. I will open it to public comment. I have a few requests to speak here, the first being Pam Hetherington, followed by Arilano Rodriguez.
Thank you for this opportunity to address you this morning. My name is Pam Hetherington. My home is in Atascadero, but I am here today as a member of the SLO County Health Commission. In 1997, the Health Commission designated a health and pesticide use task force. The purpose of the task force was to look at the ag-urban interface and the many issues that surround that interface, including pesticide drift, farm worker education, medical provider education, exposure procedures, good neighbor policies, to name a few of our concerns. We worked closely with the ag community, neighborhoods, public health agency, the Ag Commissioner's Office, the Department of Pesticide Regulation, and many non-governmental organizations. The one constant in our deliberations was the assurance of buffer zones by the Agricultural Commissioner's Office. This project undermines the agreement between the public and the agencies that protect public health. The 2005-2006 grand jury report recommended the Health and Pesticide Use Task Force reconvene annually, while the Health Commission had agreed to a three-year review We appreciated the grand jury's concern for the problems that pesticide exposure can bring. The Health Commission at this time is reviewing information in order to determine if we need to reconvene the Health and Pesticide Use Task Force. A change in buffer zones is a cause for concern. We know drift happens, whether it's 200 feet or 2 feet. Please consider the recommendations from the previous reports of the Health and Pesticide Task Force and do not vary from the 200-foot buffer zone, as is called for in your agricultural policies, and the recommendations from two public health officers, Dr. Thomas and Dr. McMillan. I would certainly urge you to keep a 200-foot buffer zone. We know what happens when those things are lessened. We know what happens even at the 200-foot buffer zone. Drift happens, people get sick. We have a fine example down in Halcyon that once the field was changed to organic, the symptoms went away. But having that 200-foot buffer zone is protection for public health, and to do anything less than a 200-foot buffer zone jeopardizes the public's health. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hetherington. And I'll take this moment to just mention we have a memo here from Dr. Craig McMillan, the county health officer, who supports Dr. Greg Thomas's recommendation that we maintain a 200-foot agricultural buffer zone. And so I'll submit that for the record. Our next request to speak is Aureliano Rodriguez, followed by Eleanor Shumway. Mr. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Aureliano Rodriguez, and I reside in Halcyon. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. I am here before your board to protest the proposed development across from the community of Halcyon, known as the Cocker Ellsworth. I have lived there for over 25 years and have come to love the view of the rolling hills above Arroyo Grande. I am not opposing the development of his property. I am opposing the high density and building height. Three-story high buildings will greatly impact the beautiful view shed that all of us enjoy. My other concern is the increased traffic that this high density project will generate. As it is, we are experiencing high-speed traffic on Halcyon Road, traffic jams, and the inability to get on the road for those who have to go to work or to school on time. Members of the community of Halcyon are now suffering a high traffic impact because of the approved development up in the Nipomo Mesa without addressing and improving the other avenues for traffic circulation. In addition, we will have to suffer the increased noise and air pollution if you approve this project. The buffer zone for this project is inadequate, and prime agricultural land must not be jeopardized to compensate it. Do not set a precedent and jeopardize this invaluable resource, prime agriculture. I urge you to deny this proposed project that was drawn for safety and aesthetic reasons. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Eleanor Shumway.
Good morning. I'm Eleanor Shumway, and as guardian in chief of the Temple of the People in Halcyon and the owner of all the land across Halcyon Road from the proposed development, I'm here to express strong opposition to the approval of this project. My objections are sixfold. The overwhelming density. Second, the damage to our viewshed of the Arroyo Grande Valley. Third, the impact to the neighboring rich agricultural land. Fourth, the precedent this would set in regard to the interface of urban and agricultural lands. Fifth, the traffic increase on already congested Halcyon Road, with inherent danger to drivers, bicyclists, and pedestrians. This is especially true of the children living in the proposed development who would need to walk to school. The east side of Halcyon Road at this place has no sidewalks and is dangerous walking. The intersection of the Pike and Halcyon Road is perilous at best. And six, the very real potential for trespass on the temple's open spaces on the west side of Halcyon Road. I recommend denial of this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shumway. That was my last request to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board. Questions, comments, Supervisor Sajian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a discussion with staff yesterday. At that time, neither one of us had the official word that this was us to be continued. I don't have a problem to see it continued, even though I was hoping we hear something from the appellant if there was a reason to do so, or if there are going to be any efforts to work with the neighboring community or not. If there are any efforts in the future, I'll be happy to get involved and come to a town hall meeting either with the housing folks and the developer. I got to know both parties, and you all seem to be reasonable people. Hopefully, by continuing this, we can come up to a solution. As Mr. Rodriguez said, they're not in opposition, or he's not in opposition to see this land developed as it's zoned for, but obviously there are some concerns by the neighboring residents who have taken the time to be here to share that with us. And I know that there has been a history about this location. At one time it was on one property, then it was gone to Peace for Agriculture under the same ownership, I should say, and that has created some, I don't want to say misguiding issues, but there has been times where the buffer was to be considered 120, then it's 200, and now it's even less. So I hope that by continuing this item, we'll have an opportunity to sit down and see what is the best for all concerned. With that, I move that we continue this item as proposed, Mr. Chair. Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we continue this item to a date certain, July 22nd,
mm-hmm.
as recommended. Okay. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lindfeld?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye. Okay, motion carries. Thank you all for coming down, and we'll hear this item again on July 22nd. Our next item on the agenda is closed session, and before we move to closed session, I'll ask for public comment on items listed in closed session. I have no request to speak, so I'll bring it back to the board and defer to Mr. Wyatt Cash. Do you have an estimate on the closed session, Mr. Cash?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wyatt Cash, County Council. Your board's going to be meeting in closed session on items listed on the agenda for approximately an hour.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, we'll adjourn to closed session.
The clerk will set a new term now, 1 hour place. 1 hour.
Please take your seats, and we'll resume the meeting of the Board of Supervisors. No?
No, it's on. It's on. You're good.
March 18th, 2008.
Thank you.
We'll have a report out of closed session. Mr. Jensen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Warren Jensen from the County Council's office. The Board did meet in closed session on some of the items listed on the agenda. No final action was taken, so no further reports required.
Thank you. Before we go to public comment, Supervisor Ovid, you had an issue you wanted to raise.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. On this morning's hearing with Redmond, it was brought to my attention that the request was both for the road fee and the appeal filing fee. That was not mentioned in the motion, and I would like to then also add the $200-some that they paid in the appeal fee to the request.
Okay.
So that it would be to refund that.
Okay,
that's
and
a new
we'll
motion.
Need a vote on that. Does that take a roll call or voice?
It can be a voice.
Voice vote. Okay, we have a motion and a second to add the appeal fee to the refund of the road impact fee to the Redmonds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll move into the afternoon public comment session. This is an opportunity for members of the public to speak on items not on the agenda, and I do have some requests to speak. First up would be Richard Margetson, followed by Richard Sadowski.
Richard Margetson, first of all, I hope Mr. Gibson's doing well. I hope the Los Osos Sewer Project and the Duval Ranch fiasco hasn't caused him any health issues. What I'm here today about is the homeless issue again. As you've seen in the paper today, Mr. Duval's making progress, it looks like. There was a meeting held at his ranch, I think it was last Wednesday in the afternoon. Approximately 40 concerned citizens throughout the county came, contractors, actually some of the neighbors across the street that didn't want to be included in the so-called NIMBY crowd, that were actually proud to have him as a neighbor, showed up. Good roundtable discussion for about 2.5 hours, things they could do, proposals they had for him to help, put the word out that structural engineers are needed, contractors are needed. We're given an update on the progress he's made on cleaning up the property. But tied into that is this, this Thursday, the first leadership council meeting for the 10-year plan for alleviating homelessness in San Luis Obispo County is being held at the Vets Hall. And I know two of the supervisors are sitting on that. I think it's Mr. Patterson and Mr. Lentil. I'm hoping that we get a good turnout from the rest of the communities in the county, because the only way this is going to be solved is with complete cooperation from the north, the south, and the central coast. The meeting that you had in South County, I finally got a chance to watch the whole tape, and I appreciate Cacho mentioning that they needed to see the video. Will we see them? And it was shown at the end of the meeting, and I hope it had the same impact for that crowd that it had the first time you gentlemen saw it. This situation isn't going to get any better with the economy the way it is at this point. I'm hoping that the Duval property and what he's trying to do out there will be incorporated in this. I think we need more than just one property to help alleviate the situation. I think we need something in North County, South County, and San Luis Obispo. And I think we need to start talking to our communities about opening up some of their public facilities for warming centers when the weather's really dramatic. I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of this in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. And yes, it is an issue here, homelessness, and we are embarking on a countywide effort to address the issue beginning this Thursday. Also, I want to comment that the Board of Supervisors was notified by representatives of Mr. Duval that they are making significant progress out there on the property in cleanup, and we appreciate that. It's been a long time coming. We're happy to see it happening. Mr. Sadowski, followed by Otto Schmidt.
Good afternoon, Board. My name is Richard Sadowski. I'm a resident of North Morro Bay. For those of you on the board that don't know, and for those of you public that don't know, I worked at the Cayuca Sanitary District. And I was a supervisor of maintenance and operations for their collection systems. And back in 2003 in December, we had a San Simeon earthquake, and parts of this county were labeled disasters, I know, in Paso Robles. A co-worker of mine, Vincent Navoa, and myself, we basically submitted a FEMA request to repair infrastructure in Cayucas during that earthquake. We found about $1.2 million was pre-approved to FEMA for the damages that that the Cayuca Sanitary District's collection system sustained. Now, this is not just a local problem in Cayucas. This is also a problem in Oceano, where we have main sewer lines breaking and polluting our beaches. This is obviously a problem in Morro Bay as well. And I personally had videotaped, I mean, on weekends, sending on cameras, floating cameras down these pipes. So I know what I see and what was reported. Now, the me and fellow, my girl, actually, Marta Jo Bruton, we wrote a report and submitted, volunteered a bunch of time in Morro Bay and analyzed a lot of their sewer infrastructure. And at the end of the day, what it shows is a dilapidated infrastructure that is severely surcharging and causing public health and safety issues and adding nitrates to our water. Part of the problem as well in Morro Bay that's been aggravated is we used to use ferrous chloride at Lift Station 5 in Cayucas, which pumps basically all the raw sewage from Cayucas to Morro Bay power treatment plant. Now they're using bioxide, which is adding nitrates into, through the leaky infrastructure, it's adding nitrates into our groundwater too, potentially. So what we're requesting is this. With the evidence that's shown everywhere all over the United States of our dilapidated infrastructure, we need a pilot program, a solution that's innovative. And that solution that's innovative is the reclamator that is being proposed in the Los Osos community. And the reclamator has a lot of advantages, and one of the things that lets the county's responsible for adding all these septic tanks into these areas in this density. So we need to kind of look at innovative solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sadowski. Otto Schmidt, followed by Marla Burton.
Good afternoon. I'm Otto Schmidt, Santa Margarita. I'm speaking to you this afternoon on the invasive species quagga and zebra freshwater mussels, the potentially irreversible catastrophic infestation of the pipes, valves, pumps, and other components of the municipal and industrial water supply systems countywide, with all the city's safe water are at risk. Densities of up to 750,000 individuals per square meter in layers more than a foot thick can build up in 6 to 8 months. Along with the operation and control of all reservoirs and their drinking water's quality and availability, the cataclysmic environmental effects of the entire 100-mile Salinas River corridor and the live stream laws and regulations are compromised. The $175 million Nacimiento Water Project could be jeopardized with the escalating economic costs to ensure the quantities and qualities of our water of the water supplies. The catastrophic introduction of these invasive species cannot be ignored and or simply dismissed as a foregone inevitability, as so wrongly expressed by some defeatist attitudes. I ask you to not delay and or misdirect too long to protracted time-consuming hearing upon hearing, and address immediately the overwhelming onslaught of this devastating effect on the health and economic welfare of this county. Please agendize this at the soonest possible time to respond proactively, not reactive, not a wait-and-see, not a superficial response, but a response to motivate the city, county, state, and feds to act now. And for you, Board of Supervisors, for part of your legacy to make the necessary and possibly difficult decisions so that these most destructive and harmful invasive freshwater mussels do not enter one of our most precious resources, water. As Parks Manager Pete Jenny said the other week in referring to Margarita Lake, the primary use or purpose of the Salinas Reservoir is safe drinking water. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. And we know that Ventura County and Santa Barbara County is acting on this issue and absolutely will be discussing this with our water supply people in Public Works as well as our parks people who manage Lopez and Santa Margarita Lakes, which are both water supply reservoirs.
At so, what time?
Well, we don't have a time certain, but we will be soon.
I've already
mentioned
are,
it.
They closed Casitas Lake, and we're talking about Tachuma, and then that could be a domino effect of both.
Yeah, absolutely. We will follow up, and thank you for your comment. Is it Marla Jo? Marla Jo Burton, or Rutan.
Good afternoon. Marla Jo Burton, North Morro Bay. I'm here today to discuss the option of the non-point source pollutants that enter the grounds in our county. I'll just speak to our county since I'm at the county board, from leaking and dilapidated sewage infrastructure collection systems. I have a report here. I don't believe we've given your board one of these. We gave Mr. Gibson a copy when he was on LAFCO. But it's a report that Richard Sadowski and myself compiled about the damaged lines in Morro Bay and Cayucas and how that goes with the wastewater treatment plant. I'm also here today to encourage you to consider the reclamator solution for Los Osos. And for the people out there at home, how this relates to a property owner is that you buy your water from a water purveyor, and once you buy that water, if you have a reclamator in your or something of that quality, National Sanitation Foundation status required, you know, the federal level, that's the highest standard of non-point source for sewage. I won't go into that. It's a big, long story. Anyway, I'm here today to ask you to sincerely look at the reclamator as an option. The homeowners, they buy their water, they reclaim their own water, they either release it into the aquifer, and at the time that it's released, it is not considered a discharge by national standards for a pollutant. So when it's discharged from the reclamator, it's at a clean water, clean creek status as far as water monitoring goes. And also what we'd like is, along with permitting of the reclamator in Los Osos and elsewhere in the county, we would like an exemption from hooking up to a conventional antiquated sewer collection line. And if that exemption doesn't come through, then we're asking that the county and the regional board consider allowing the homeowner to charge the sewer collection system and sewer plant for, at fair market value for the price of the water that's going into the sewer. So I have this report, and then I also am submitting a letter from the City of Morro Bay and Cayuga Sanitary District to Jeffrey Young at the Regional Water Quality Board, and it's dated March 3, 2006.
Would you submit those to the clerk, please?
Yes, I will. I'm not going to read it, but I have a blue sticky here at the paragraph that's pertinent.
Thank you very much. Patrick Sparks, are you here to speak on public comment or on item C5?
I'm here for public comment.
Okay, you're up, followed by Al Barrow.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I was here last time and we presented the request for an exemption to community collection sewer system hookup. And since that time, I've spoken with your Public Works Director and the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board's enforcement agency person, Harvey Packard. No one is taking the responsibility for it at this time. I would like the legal counsel at some point to evaluate whether or not the issues of just compensation and eminent domain for recycled water is in fact something that, if you're going to force a connection from a reclamator system, which is what currently is a possibility, if in fact you go forward with the community collection system in Los Osos. What I'm suggesting today is that you just go ahead and take a no option. It could come out in your EIR as one of the options in September from the report that you just asked for, but I'm saying that you can sidetrack that right now, and I'm requesting the board soon to put it on the agenda to consider the no option. If the reclamator water that's installed in Los Osos comes out the way that NSF and everyone else has indicated that it will, with the membrane and the new standard is set as to the clarity of the water, then I would hope that this board would recognize that going forward with the community collection system would be cost prohibitive and it wouldn't be the lowest responsible bidder in any way, shape, or form. So to continue to proceed funding EIRs for an unnecessary system would be unfair to the citizens in Los Osos. I would hope that this board would take that under consideration. We've presented them already the information for purposes of it. I've attached another way. One of the issues that comes up is we believe that since it's the best available treatment alternative, best available demonstrated technology, that it qualifies for a rebate from the federal government. But we can't get the rebate as a private entity. So we've asked the public entities to join us, LOCSD, the county board, and the county board has indicated, well, through their public works department, that pursuant to AB 2701, that you're not going to be responsible for on-site treatment. Even though you did a technical memorandum, that'll be the no option. So what I'm proposing at this point is that we just go ahead and form a nonprofit organization and for the citizens of Los Osos to take care of them getting their 75% rebate. We'll create the agency needed. So I've attached that to my documents here today. I'd like you to consider those documents in relationship to also what we have going up before the State Water Board in Sacramento. We think that your Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board is way out of hand. They've got a new memorandum that they've created under 2008, and it really supersedes their authority from federal jurisdiction. So we're hoping that at some point you guys can figure that out and make the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sparks. Al Barrow?
Does this belong to you, sir?
No, it doesn't.
Somebody else? Okay. My name is Al Barrow. Thank you very much, Mr. Patterson, for introducing me. Good afternoon, members of the public and the board. Quick announcement, there is an alternative seminar for Los Osos wastewater and any wastewater, actually, at the Biological Gardens, the San Luis Obispo Botanical Gardens over near Cherry Creek Golf Course, Dairy Creek. April 9th, 6:30 to 9:30. And there will be some experts there, Brock Dobson, who will expound on existing technologies that don't create big carbon footprints, that don't use a lot of energy, in other words, helps the project comply with AB 32, which, of course, the Attorney General's office has demanded that all counties in the state of California comply with as best as they can. They may be talking about a wastewater forest, which is a wastewater treatment forest that will absorb all the effluent that's produced by any form of treatment. And in return, there will be no carbon footprint for that. There will be no energy. As the trees grow, they absorb the moisture and the nutrients, and they grow about three times as fast because of all the nutrients. And they produce a cash crop of about $3.5 million a year, which is kind of nice to have a positive cash flow instead of a negative one on technology that's using. And I would also like to point out that the TAC is looking at pond systems, and Templeton has a pond system that's been going on for 5 years or more successfully at a cost of $3.5 million to the taxpayers in Templeton. Same size treatment as Los Osos would require. $3.5 million, not $50 million, $3.5 million. And the person who designed that and install that is sitting on your tack. Rob Miller, the Wallace Group. Approved by our water board. They recharge the water, Ag Exchange, they pipe it across the Salinas River, not a creek, a river, and they percolate it back into the aquifer, secondary treated water. Perfect example. I encourage anybody who is interested in an economical, environmentally viable, sustainable project to look at the Templeton site. Even just call the wastewater manager down there and ask him how it's working. Ask him if they've had any failures. Ask them if they've had any overflows. So with that, I will say, have a great week.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. That concludes my request to speak during public comment on items not on the agenda. However, for those of you that may not have tuned in earlier this morning, you notice that we have a vacancy here on the board. Supervisor Gibson underwent an aortic heart valve replacement surgery this morning, and we got a report this afternoon that he is out of surgery and that it was a successful procedure. He's awake and wiggling his toes and fingers, so we hope he's on his way to a fast recovery. We do expect him back here in the next few weeks, so that's good news. You'll see us all smiling this afternoon for that reason. Okay, with that, then, we'll move on to our next hearing item, which is item C4, but those were actually pulled pink slip, basically, C4 and C5, so we'll just move right on to item D1, and Madam Clerk, if you will introduce that, we'll proceed.
The next item is item D1, and this is presentation of the final draft of the airport master plan for the Oceano Airport, and the recommendation is for approval.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, George Rosenberger, General Services. I have a few quick little comments here while folks are getting set up. I want you to recognize today is a milestone in regards to this issue dealing with Oceano Airport. And Oceano Airport, known as the county's other airport, affectionately. When the airport was built in the early 1950s, it was built by Madonna Construction, kind of a lost a bit of trivia. I want you to know that this is the first comprehensive master plan in the almost 60-year history of the Oceano Airport. And with that bit of little information about that milestone, I'll let Klosha Naren and Craig Piper and Jim Harris with Kaufman and Associates run you through the master plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenberger.
Sure, before we get started, can we also know a little bit of history? Is that going to be the last time you step to the podium, George, other than giving a resolution when you leave here?
It might be next week.
Klosha, would you like to proceed then?
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. Chairman,
you're not on. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, we're bringing before you the Oceano County Airport Master Plan. As George mentioned, this is the first one in history that we've done. We actually attempted one in 1986 and never got it here. So we did try at one point and couldn't quite get it here. Another point that George made was that Madonna Construction actually built the airport, and they built it for the grand sum of $94,000. We can't even do an environmental document for that anymore, so that'll tell you how far we've come or have not come. Also, Craig Piper, the assistant manager at the airport, is actually going to guide you through some of the points of the plan, as well as Jim Harris from Kaufman Associates, who will make the presentation as well. The master planning process for Oceano was started with the intent to create a plan that addresses future development on the airport in a well-thought-out process. It began, actually, late in September of 2005 with your board's approval of Kaufman's contract. And it's taken a while to get here, and I'll get into some of the reasons for that. Planning Advisory Committee was formed to provide input to the consultant from airport users and community members in the development of a realistic and viable program. The first Planning Advisory Committee meeting took place on November 15th of 2005. In addition to the PAC, public information workshops were held, providing the opportunity for the general public to discuss the draft elements of the plan with the consultant and airport staff. Three workshops were held throughout the planning process, with the final workshop and Planning Advisory Committee meeting taking place on August 16th of 2007. We finally got it on the airport land use planning agenda in last month, and so it took us about 4 months to get it on the Airport Land Use Commission's agenda. The meetings kept getting canceled, so that's why we had to bump this up a little bit too. That was presented to the Airport Land Use Commission on February 20th, and they found the plan to be consistent with the Oceano Airport Land Use Plan. So with that, I will introduce Jim Harris from Kaufman Associates, whom you most of you have already seen before. They were also the consultants that have done San Luis's master plans in the past. So, Jim Harris.
Thank you, Klasha. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to be here today. I'll give a brief presentation on the master plan effort, and then I'm going to turn it back over to Craig, who will get into some more detailed aspects of the plan. And if I could, I just wanted to take a moment to thank the 18 members of our Planning Advisory Committee who took their time and energy to be involved in this process. And again, this is a group of stakeholders which their input and comment and participation in the plan was quite valuable in the results of the planning effort. I know I'm going to just touch upon a few things which you already know, but the existing airport, as you know, kind of runs in a northwest-southeast configuration, but sits on approximately 58 acres of property. The single runway that is on the airport is a little over 2,300 feet in length and 50 feet wide. There's about a dozen hangars at the airport presently, about 34 tie-downs, and there is fuel available at the airport. But I think the most interesting part of it is that it does sit on 58 acres, which is a very small footprint for an airport. But again, a very unique airport in the sense of its position on the coastline and its value to the community and to the pilots that use that airport. One of the things that we did as part of this master planning effort is really looking out 20 years, trying to get an assessment of what we think the activity at the airport will be. There are two basic measures of airport activity, particularly at a general aviation airport. First is based aircraft, number of aircraft that actually call the airport home. And the second one is operations or takeoff and landings. And as you can see by the chart that's been presented, there are currently 12 based aircraft at the airport, physically residing at the airport. And even over the 20-year period, while the numbers we could say are doubling, it's really an increase of about 10 aircraft over the next 20 years. So about an aircraft every second year, we would anticipate there being a demand to base at the airport. So by the year 2025, which is our future time horizon, we would expect the airport to be the home, at least from a demand standpoint, to about 22 aircraft. Now, when we talk about operations or takeoff and landings at the airport, there are approximately 4,500 takeoff and landings currently at the airport, and we would anticipate as activity increases, particularly the number of based aircraft, that operations would also increase, and so that number would almost double to approximately 9,000 or 9,400 takeoff and landings at the airport. So these numbers were actually reviewed. There were several different scenarios of forecast developed, but these particular planning numbers were submitted to the FAA, and they did sign off on them. They gave a formal approval of these particular numbers for our planning effort, which is important because there are two aspects that FAA approves during a master planning effort. One is the forecast, and the other is the airport layout plan, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Working with the committee, we discovered there were several different planning considerations that we wanted to focus on. Some we knew of, some came to light during our committee meetings. We focused first on the airside planning considerations. First of all was meeting standards, design standards, FAA standards for the runway airfield configuration. One of those standards is that the runway should be approximately 60 feet in width. The taxiway should be 25 feet in width. And in some cases, the taxiways, the connector taxiways are lighted, but most of the parallel taxiways are not. Some have reflectors. But in other areas, there should be at a minimum reflectors installed on the taxiways. There is a taxiway realignment that should be done on the main apron just for a configuration effort that was brought to light, something that would improve efficiency and space on the apron. The land uses of the runway protection zones on both ends of the airport we did look at and take those into consideration. And the segmented circle and windsocks on the airport, both for development purposes and just for consistency, we evaluated the position of where those are located. And there is supplemental windsocks that needed to be installed at the end of each runway. That was a request by a number of the pilots to get better wind information on both runway ends. So those were the airfield considerations. The landside considerations, surprisingly, was more hangars, additional hangar capacity at the airport, big demand for hangars, providing additional commercial industrial business opportunities. And really what we meant here was possible revenue enhancement at the airport from other business activities on the airport, which we'll also talk about in just a moment. Constructing a maintenance facility at the airport would be beneficial to the pilots to do maintenance work. And providing additional tie-down areas. The tie-down areas do get full from time to time, and there was demand for some additional area. And then also the improvements to Delta Lane, which is the access from the south side around the end of the airport to the west side of the airport. Now, I know these drawings are fairly small. This represents the entire master plan concept. Again, I think probably the most important feature about the recommendation of the plan is that there's really no change in the role or character of the airport. We still see it remaining a small general aviation airport serving small, privately owned general aviation aircraft. As such, there were not significant changes in the environment at the airport. Most of it included safety enhancements and some aspects of redevelopment and providing some hangar and apron space. Now, I'm going to let Craig talk a little bit more in detail, so I'll kind of gloss over a couple areas here because he has some more to say on these issues. But the other one, this inset is the major apron area. This is a focus of a lot of attention of the plan, is redevelopment of this particular area with an awful lot of emphasis on development that would provide revenue to the airport. Finally, again, another drawing, which is a little complicated and awfully small, but this is the airport layout plan. This is the final resulting document that is submitted to the FAA. This, as a result of all our meetings with the committee and the recommended concept was put together, has been formally submitted to the FAA, and they are taking a look at it. So we're awaiting their comments on that document as well. But following or until the board actually takes action on the plan, a formal submittal to the FAA won't take place until your action is completed. Just wanted to highlight another thing, that gaining the property information, which is now a requirement of FAA, identifying all the property interests on the airport. What I mean by that is, how did the county acquire the property? Where did it come from? There's a number of parcels that make up the airport property. We spent quite a bit of time, and airport staff was very helpful in helping gather an awful lot of data about the airport and the history of property acquisition. This is now a requirement of FAA, as they have done also at San Luis Obispo Airport. Finally, a capital improvement program was assembled for the airport, again, looking out 20 years. This happens to be the short-term program. I won't take you through all the projects. We've just discussed those briefly. But we did identify on a project-by-project basis all the projects that would or should be accomplished under the master plan program for the next 20 years. It also includes an intermediate and a long-term program, so all the projects that have been identified combined result in a total capital improvement cost to the airport of about $5.1 million. Of that, about $3.8 million is eligible for federal funding through the FAA. There are additional funding sources through Caltrans that will help assist with the matching grants and other projects to the tune of about $370,000. And that leaves the county's responsibility, or the local share in this case, at about $1 million. That would be primarily matching monies to grants and projects that would not be funded either by FAA or by Caltrans. So that gives a very quick overview of the master planning effort and what took place during the development of the master plan. And with that, I guess I'll turn it back to Craig, who's going to spend a little more time on some other details.
Thank you. Mr. Piper.
Good afternoon. Craig Piper, Assistant Airports Manager. As Jim kind of touched on there with the master plan, it's divided into two different areas, airside and landside. There are also some that are kind of off from the main portion of the airport. I'll try to point them out here with a mouse. Land releases, there's a couple pieces or parcels that we own. And there's a little sliver right there, doesn't even touch our main perimeter, so one of those things we'll be looking at to work on a land release for that. In regard to the airside, this includes the runway and taxiway and associated land around that where the air operations take place, anything that affects the operation of the aircraft. And projects included in this are the widening and of the runway and the taxiway, upgrading the airfield lighting. This would be the replacing of the circuits that are in ground. They run along the edge of the runway, as well as some of the connector taxiways. It's a relocation. You can't really see it on this particular slide here, but the relocation of the segment circle is where the main windsock is, and then the addition of a couple supplemental windsocks at each end of the runway. And on the land side, where Jim had talked about, this is where the main focus of the master plan is at. Projects include the moving of the perimeter fence out here to into the parking lot. It's basically redeveloping that parking lot to make better use of. There's a lot of space that we don't use right now. There's an existing flight building right here, as well as a county-owned house that currently an airport employee lives in. Those two buildings would be demolished to make way for additional parking. And then what we'd do is move the fuel farm over to the side, opening up that middle part of the ramp for aircraft maneuver, and then making way for the addition of those hangars for additional hangar space for the either businesses or those aircraft that are projected to want to be housed at the airport. And then down to the right, these two hangars here actually are covering over some existing hangars. Those are old, probably original hangars on the airport. What they're suggesting is to actually remove those hangars, replace them with new hangars, and add a couple more to the side. That's the north land side. Then we have the south land side on the south side of the runway, and what's being recommended or suggested in the plan is to bring in a couple more, four more hangars, additional ramp space. This is the segmented circle. This is the existing location. They're suggesting to move it over to the side to make way for that ramp and the hangars. And then right below that, you can see the blue line. This is an existing dirt road. What they're proposing here is to actually pave that over, provide access to the south side of the airport from Delta Lane, which comes off of railroad. So for each of these elements, if they're developed into a project, it'd require review under NEPA and CEQA, as well as fall under the permitting jurisdiction of the California Coastal Commission. We've been assured that those elements that add impervious surface to the airport will be difficult and expensive to accomplish under the CEQA review and the Coastal Commission permitting process. Although the airport is eligible for FAA AIP grants, at this time they can only be used to fund under the NEPA review, which will require the airport to entirely fund the CEQA review. As a result of the anticipated lengthy review process, it's our intent to pursue those elements that are both landside and airside that result in minimizing the additional impervious surface. They include the redevelopment, primarily again up here around the north side of the airport, redevelopment of the existing improvements, the land release that I mentioned, replacement of the or upgrade of the additional or the aircraft runway lighting. At some point in the future, to address that, the runway widening and taxiway widening, we may pursue a modification of standard with the FAA for the runway and taxiway. And what this would do is it would if they approve it, it would eliminate any future requirement from the FAA for us to have to widen that runway and taxiway. So what we're asking your board is to accept and adopt the plan as we've presented it, but with the understanding that all the projects that we undertake will be subject to the appropriate environmental review, and each project will be brought to your board for approval. And that's all I have.
So what Craig is actually, what we're doing a little different with this than we did with San Luis Obispo, we did an entire environmental EIR process with San Luis Obispo that actually went over the whole plan. This one is a little different because we do have some issues with the Coastal Commission. The widening of the runway and the taxiway, we've explored that before. We were met with a great deal of resistance to do that. But it is a design standard. And so what we will be attempting to do with the FAA is to get a modification to that standard. Widening the runway and the taxiway adds 45,000 square feet of impervious surface. And we will find that incredibly difficult to do. In fact, we likened getting an EIR to just do that, as pouring money down a black hole. Probably cost us well over $1 million just for that environmental review process. So we're not really trying to go down that road. The character of the airport, we would like it to stay the same in large degree. Yes, there are some additional changes that would make flow around the airport better, that when we move the fuel facility, move that over to the side so that airplanes can get around better, adding some additional hangars. The elements are very difficult on airplanes out there. If you don't have it inside, it will turn to rust rather quickly. So those are the things that we'd like to address. We make no money at Oceano. It is pretty much it relies on San Luis Obispo to take care of it. And so we need to find some ways to generate some revenue. We have an annual assessment with the Zone 11A that is rather sizable, $26,000 to $28,000 a year, and we don't have many ways to fund that. So a lot of what we looked at here was some ways to generate some revenue but still keep the character of the airport. So that's what you have in front of you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Klasha. Comments or questions for staff or the consultant? Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I start, I'd like to thank everyone, Noreen and George. When they're involved, you always expect the very best. When you say the character, it would still be a recreational airport?
Yes.
Okay. And thank you for involving Mr. Bishop in the work that you did. Do you think with his involvement and everything else that there are still problems with the coastal staff?
You know, it was somewhat disappointing. We didn't receive any comments from the Coastal Commission. We sent them all of the reports and the updates, but we didn't receive any comments. So I guess we could characterize that as good news. What we tried to do was to do projects that we thought we could get Coastal Commission permits for. And that's really what we concentrated on.
When you say Coastal Commission staff.
Right, okay. Exactly.
And when you requested any input, were you to give them a time frame where you were expecting something in return?
Yes,
Okay. And I would like to have a copy of those in case in the future, if this was to be appealed, then I have something that I can use in my testimony, so to say. Now, with all these improvements, is there any future impacts on nearby land that might be zoned what it is today, but with this, they're going to have a challenge?
No. You know, there's some pre-existing conditions out there that we probably will not tackle. Some homes that are actually in the RPZ area, but they are pre-existing. So we are existing to this day that we don't feel we want to tackle. The land use, you know, we are consistent with the airport land use plan.
or the, and the master plan is consistent. So I don't think there's going to be any impacts. As Jim mentioned also, the amount of traffic that is expected at Oceano is not expected to increase by huge volumes. It is what it is. And I don't, you know, we didn't have much, it was surprising through this process, quite frankly, that we didn't have as much input as we thought we were going to have.
At one time, there was some fear by landlords who thought that this was the beginning of a challenging future for them. And we met a couple of times to address those needs, and I just want to have that assurance that as we move forward, we don't have any surprises for any of the neighbors.
I don't think that you will.
Yeah, but again, thank you. Great job, and it will really turn into a real asset for the community. And I hope it will. It won't be as expensive to operate. We'll have some revenues generated.
Thank you very much.
Okay. A couple of quick questions, if I may. You had mentioned lights, adding lights to the taxiways and maybe even the runway, and that there were some issues potentially with that, or some concerns, I should say. Are the lights on all night, or they just operated until a particular time in the evening?
The runway lights, they're small lights. They stand about 18 to 20 inches tall along the runway, and they're spaced about 150 to 200 feet apart. They're there for the aircraft to see when they come in and land. They don't affect anything off the airport. They're not bright enough to have that type of effect. They are also on a timer, as well as what we call pilot control lighting. So when they're flying in, they can key their mic, and it'll actually bring the lights up so they can see them. So it doesn't have any impact to much farther than just, you know, a few feet off the airport.
But it's an enhancement over what's there now.
Really what it is is you have to replace the conductor, the electrical conductor, every few years, and especially down there. It degrades over time. It's a 5,000-volt constant current circuit, so it degrades and has to be replaced. And that's what they're recommending, is replacing that, the oxidation gets to the fixtures. It deteriorates rather rapidly down there, and that's what they're recommending.
Okay. Thank you.
Do any public comment?
I'll open it to public comment. I have no request to speak, so.
With that, Mr. Chair, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the Oceano Airport Master Plan. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
And with that, we'll adjourn today's meeting.